Hey team, welcome to Rewriting Wellbeing, the Teacher's Health Podcast, the show that helps you thrive and not just survive, both in and out the classroom. Let's get into it. Hello, before we get into today's episode, I just want to quickly apologise for the audio quality. I've just realised I didn't plug in my microphone, so in a second, when the episode starts, you're going to see it drop off. So I do apologise for that. Please bear with it for today. I can promise you it's worth it. Hello, welcome back to the podcast. Thank you for being here with me. I hope you are doing really, really well. I'm sat here. It is about 4 p.m. on a very rainy, cold and now dark Thursday evening. As this goes out, it's going to be probably quite a dark, rainy Friday morning. But if you're listening to this before the weekend, hope you have an amazing weekend. And I also hope that this episode today gives you something to ponder over the weekend and something to sort of ruminate and think about. So what I want to talk to you about today is this concept of burnout. Now, you've hopefully seen that I've recently released the Beat Burnout course, which has gone down really, really well, has some amazing feedback and reviews from it. But I thought that the information that was locked up in that course was so important, and it's a topic that there are still many misconceptions and myths about, and I wanted to kind of talk on that a little bit with you today. So before we kind of go into what burnout actually is and isn't, and before we explore the stages of burnout, what we need to talk about is this sort of history of burnout, kind of where it comes from, because it is a relatively new term as sort of history goes. So this concept of burnout has its origins in the field of psychology, and it was discovered or coined by two American psychologists, Herbert Freudenberger and Christina Maslach, way back when in the 1970s. And they sort of went through this journey of talking to their patients who were showing signs of sort of like distress and cognitive separation and sort of depersonalization and kind of separating from their hopes, their dreams, their wishes, as well as their relationships. And they pinned it down to the fact that these people were burning out. You know, they were so highly stressed, they were chronically stressed, they were fatigued, they were showing signs of discontent, they were really not in a good place, they were not happy at all. And this was affecting their physical health as well as their mental health. And so they went through a bit of a journey of discovery, and Maslach actually created the Maslach Burnout Inventory, and this is now a widely used tool to measure symptoms of burnout. So that's kind of where the term comes from. So it's only 50 years old or so. And I think it's really interesting that so many of those words that I've just said can directly relate to some of the emotions and feelings and things that we go through as teachers, right? And we know that in teaching, we struggle with excessive workloads, classroom management, behavior challenges, lack of support, whether that's, you know, higher level funding from the DfE, or whether that is, you know, within schools, or if that's with additional adults, you know, these external pressures like testing and evidencing everything and data and all these other things, alongside the actual trying to teach the children and manage their parent relationships and all these different areas. So we know that we have so much on our plate as teachers. And like I say, a lot of that language that I've just used, you can clearly see how that is also going to link with teaching. Now, Dr. Kate Steiner said something really, really interesting when it comes to burnout. She said, in order to break the cycle of burnout, it's important to observe and identify your burn events. So these are the times, I call them the pinch points, but she calls them your burn events. These times where things get really tight for time, you start to get overwhelmed, and it layers and layers and layers until it feels overwhelming, and you begin the journey of burnout. And if you can identify your burn events, prepare for those that you can identify and make sure you focus on recovering from each. So that's Dr. Kate Steiner. And what's really important there is that we're talking about identifying what is causing us to burn out and also focusing on the recovery. Now, I'm very passionate about us being proactive, about us taking responsibility, about us doing what we can. We know the culture of teaching and the situation in teaching is not ideal right now. We know about the funding issues. We know about the retention crisis. We know that teaching has likely never been harder. But what's important is that we do take a level of individual responsibility, because ultimately, if we don't, we're basically, you know, we're going with the flow, and the way the flow is going in teaching right now is not ideal. So I think that by taking that individual responsibility, yes, there is shared responsibility always. You know, well-being in school is not just down to one person, whether that's the head teacher or whether that is the classroom teacher. It's not down to one person. It is a community
responsibility. But I do think by taking that individual responsibility, we can do what we need to, or what we have access to address our own stress and set our own boundaries and these sorts of things. Now, of course, the culture or the climate, should I say, in teaching right now, it is a little bit bleak, right? Thinking about the Education 2022 Wellbeing Index, you know, they said that 59% of staff have considered leaving the sector, 55% of staff have sought out other jobs, 68% of staff cited volume as the workload as the reason for thinking about leaving teaching, 47% of us as teachers go into work when we're not well, and 78% of us have experienced mental health symptoms due to teaching. So, you know, we know that the climate of education is really, really tough at the moment. So what actually is burnout then? So there are, as I say, loads of myths around what burnout is and what it isn't, and misconceptions. And what burnout isn't is just feeling stressed or tired quite a lot. That's not burnout. It's definitely not something that's irreversible. Burnout's not limited to the workplace either. You know, the contributing factors from home are going to go into that same bucket, as I'm sure we'll talk about in another episode, and that's going to contribute to your stages of burnout. It's not also only psychological. You know, it impacts us physically and physiologically, and it's not just something that happens to the weak or the lazy. In fact, what we often see is that those who are most driven, often driven by insecurity or driven by a lack of self-worth or a need to do more, often it's those people that burn out the most. And there's plenty of us, I'm probably one of those people, there's plenty of us in teaching. So what actually is it then? Well, it's a symptom of a build-up. It's a symptom of a much deeper problem. It's chronic and it's prolonged. It's also a really individual experience. You know, I'm not going to struggle or suffer with burnout the same way that you will. You know, it's completely individual. And it's based on our past experiences and other factors that impact our mental health, like our socioeconomic status or the culture of our school or our support network that we do or don't have. It's also complex and multifaceted. As we're going to look at in a second when we talk about the stages of burnout, it's not just one, you know, it's not just the fact that I'm a bit stressed or I'm a bit tired or it's just workload. There's different layers, and we need to kind of pick those layers apart before we can think about addressing burnout. And worryingly, it's increasingly common. More and more people are experiencing burnout. So to build a bit of a definition of burnout, to build up a bit of a clearer picture of what it actually is, we need to talk about what the symptoms are. Like, what are the signs that you can spot in yourself, and what are the signs that you can spot in other people? So for me, my first sign of burnout is emotional exhaustion. When I feel like I'm being irritable, when I feel like I'm being a bit more cynical, a bit more pessimistic, when I feel like I don't have the emotional bandwidth. You know, I talked about this with clients the other day, and I said, when I feel overwhelmed emotionally, or when I'm emotionally exhausted, I feel like a sponge that's been wet all the way through. I can't take on any more water. I can't take on any more emotion or mental load. I need to go away, I need to wring myself out, and I need to come back. Now, as a teacher, the way that you soak up that emotion and you absorb the stress and the tension and even like the questions you're being asked, like, you know, 10,000 questions a day, all of that is very similar to being a coach. You know, I've noticed that the emotional toll and the emotional energy you absorb is very similar in both roles. So for me, that hasn't really changed. But when I notice that emotional exhaustion starting to kick in, and I feel like I haven't got the capacity to be empathetic, and I haven't got the capacity to be there for people, which is literally my job and something I love to do, that's a big red flag. The other thing for me that's a big red flag is a loss of creativity. So when I have a lack of creativity, whether that's in my work life or my personal life, and when that starts to extend to things like not just coming up with new ideas, but struggling to write or struggling to multitask or even think of like solutions for really simple tasks in everyday life, for me, that's a massive red flag. Now, we can also, of course, experience the physical exhaustion, so that feeling physically exhausted all of the time. Now, this isn't just, okay, I feel a bit tired. This is absolutely wiped. Pretty much no matter how much you sleep, no matter how well you eat, no matter how well hydrated you are, you still feel absolutely exhausted, like you haven't done any of those things. So if you wake up tired, you go to bed tired, and you generally have no energy, then you are going to be physically exhausted. Another thing that a lot of people see is detachment. And this is when we start to withdraw from people around us because we simply don't have the energy to socialize, and we don't get the same pleasure out of spending time with friends and family. When you feel like you are socially detaching, that's a really key sign that you may be burning out. Another one that we often don't really think about, but that's the lack of enjoyment. You know, when we have this inability to find pleasure in the things that we used to enjoy, when the things that used to light us up, the things we used to love, when they no longer bring us pleasure and joy, it's going to be a sign of burnout. Maybe they feel like they're too much effort, or maybe we just feel like we've got too many other things to do and we don't make time, we don't do what makes us happy, because it simply doesn't as much as it used to. Lack of self-care, another really, really clear sign. So when we stop doing things that are prioritizing and looking after us, which as teachers is difficult anyway, but when these other symptoms happen, then it leads us down a bit of a helter-skelter, a bit of a spiral to lacking that self-care. You know, when things like healthy eating, going to bed at a regular time, taking time to go out for a walk, taking time to be active, when these types of self-care go out the window and it just becomes scrolling and Netflix, or scrolling and you know, just sort of using food as a comfort blanket, or emotional eating or anything like that, we know that that's a sign. And finally, the last thing is going to be a sense of overwhelm, of this sort of this sense of almost you're drowning, right? You're completely overwhelmed, and that is obviously going to lead to procrastination, right? You know what you should be doing, quote unquote should, you know, I don't like that word, should comes with shame, could put you in control, but this sense of overwhelm leads us to procrastinate, and we just can't seem to take any form of action to get out of where we are. We feel like we are completely in the fog, we are completely trapped, and this then compounds that feeling of feeling quite disappointed in ourselves. So we feel emotionally and physically exhausted, we lack enjoyment, we start to detach from others, we lose creativity, we lack self-care, and then we feel overwhelmed and procrastinate. When these symptoms, or I would say, I think it's 4 to 5, don't quote me on this, but I think it's 4 to 5 or more of these symptoms is the kind of medical definition. When we experience those chronically and over a prolonged period of time, a combination of 4 or 5 of those, that's when we would say we are burnt out, and you would go to the doctor and they would say, okay, you know, you are experiencing mental and physical burnout. So that is what burnout actually is. Those are the symptoms of burnout. And like I say, it's a relatively new concept, it's only about 50 years old or so, but it is massively on the rise. Now, burnout doesn't just happen overnight, and you don't wake up one morning and think, oh, I'm burnt out. It's a slow, insidious sort of progression that creeps into our lives. Olivia Cram says about burnout, it can be tempting in our goal-oriented society to push ourselves beyond our capacities in pursuit of success. But when we do this, we are telling ourselves that our work and our teaching is more important than our health. But without our health, our success, whatever that means, is going to mean nothing. No promotion, no raise, no accolade, no children's performance, no SATs results, no reading test results, no data drop, no parents meeting is going to mean anything at all if you aren't happy and healthy. That is the bottom line. Happiness and healthiness is the absolute fundamental of our lives. That is what the primary thing we are here to experience. So like I say, burnout doesn't just happen overnight. It's insidious. It creeps in bit by bit by bit. So let's talk through the stages of burnout and what that journey actually looks like. You're going to relate a lot to this. So the first thing is going to be the honeymoon phase. Now, in the initial phase, and it may be you've taken on a new role, it may be that you've gone to a new year group, or maybe it's just a new September and it's a new cohort. We often go into that period of time with enthusiasm, optimism, motivation. You know, we feel like we want to do a great job. We're feeling maybe we don't want to go back to school or go for this new role, but we're doing it right. And we kind of have built ourselves up to that point. We might even be excited, potentially. You know, we might have set ambitious goals. We might really want to, you know, this is the class that struggles with behavior. I'm really going to sort of support them with that and help them regulate. I'm going to turn that around. And, you know, this is the class that have really struggled with writing. I'm going to get into that. I'm going to support them more. These are just the children that need that love and care and nurture. And I'm going to be the person that gets them there. Yeah, you may have those sort of thoughts as you go into a new role. And this sort of honeymoon phase, if you like, is often characterized by this sense of like idealism, you know, rose-tinted glasses, and this desire to excel. Now, we're not going to talk about it too much today, But we know that as teachers, lots of us are carers, givers, supporters. That's our personality. And sometimes that comes from insecurity or low self-worth. And when that happens, we overwork and we try to overdeliver. We overpromise. We try to overdeliver. We don't say no. And that is obviously in the honeymoon phase, that's great. But that's very soon going to lead to what we call the onset of stress. Like I say, we might be working over hours, as we normally do, but significantly over hours in the evenings. We might be investing more mentally and emotionally. We might even be putting, you know, a bit of a financial commitment. You know, I know many teachers, I did it for a lot of my career, putting financial pressure on ourselves because we're buying stuff for the classroom and all this kind of stuff. Now, phase two is that onset of stress. Now, as time passes, these work-related stresses are going to begin to build up and build up. And they might include, you know, increasing workload, the job demands, you know, parental teacher engagements or lack of, you know, pressure from colleague, maybe toxic relationships or challenging interpersonal relationships. And we're going to start to experience these very first signs of stress-related fatigue. And that initial sort of idealism and that enthusiasm is going to start to wane a little bit in this second phase. And as I say, signs of stress are going to come through fatigue, irritability, feelings of overwhelm, feelings of almost not being able to find the end of the threads. You know, where do I start today? I've got this big ball of wool in front of me. Where do I begin? That kind of onset of stress, which is very normal for teachers. But when this builds up and this becomes chronic, we enter the chronic stress phase. And again, this is sort of characterized by that continued experience of stress. Those demands and those pressures persist and they begin to intensify. And we can really struggle to find a balance between work and personal life. And this is the almost, not the cliff edge, but this is a big turning point for many, many people. When we start to lose ourselves to teaching, when we start to lose our lives, our relationships, which is very, very easy to do, this is where we start to say, oh, right, okay, I am on the road to burnout here. I'm heading down this road pretty rapidly. And again, when it impacts work and home, that's when we, you know, we start to feel perpetually exhausted and drained. And as I say, you know, these ongoing signs of stress begin to really emerge in irritability and start to affect other areas of our lives. And those levels of engagement in, like, you know, the classic self-care habits or, you know, doing the hobbies that you love, spending time with people you love, these sort of things that really keep you going as a human being start to fall by the wayside a little bit. Then we get to burnout. You know, we reach burnout and all those symptoms that I've talked about so much really come to the surface and they really start having that impact. You know, we're at this critical point where those full effects of burnout become apparent. You know, almost like they rear their head sort of thing. And we're going to experience that deep emotional and physical exhaustion. We're going to have a really pessimistic, negative, cynical attitude towards work, home, the world. And of course, you can kind of hear in that language that there's a really close link, a really fine line between burnout and depression. And sometimes they, you know, they're not interchangeable phrases, but sometimes you'll see a bit of each in both of those sort of conditions, if you like. Mental illness and poor mental health, they are themselves two slightly separate things. It's not something we'll talk about today, but it's really important that if you are experiencing anything of what I'm talking about, or you feel like you may be experiencing depression, that you do reach out. You know, Ed Support are an amazing charity, but you've got Mind, you've got Samaritans, you've got so many amazing charities and organizations there who are there to support you. You know, it's really important if you do experience any of this, you do start to reach out. It's very difficult to do. It's not nice to ask for help, but even talking to loved ones around you can make the world of difference. You know, I've been through that, and talking to someone was the first step that really, really pulled me out of where I was. Again, we're going to start to really disengage with people. We might not want to ask for support. We might not want to show people, because in our minds, we might feel like that we're weak, that we're struggling, that we're not good enough. And that reinforces that low self-worth and those insecurity issues that I mentioned before. None of that is true. You know, your self-worth doesn't fluctuate. It's not up for negotiation. Your self-worth as a human being, as a person, is stable no matter what you do. You know, you are always worthy of that self-care, that time, that attention, that sort of almost love for yourself without sounding too sort of wishy-washy. But it's true, right? It doesn't fluctuate. It really, really doesn't. But we can feel like we are, you know, our worth is attached to what we do rather than being attached to who we are. So we often see that we disengage. Now, there is a fifth part to these to this burnout journey, and it's not as recognized in the science as the first four stages: honeymoon, onset, chronic burnout, and into this fifth one. It's not as recognized, but there is a fifth element, and that is what we call habitual burnout. Now, this is where someone essentially will go through burnout several times, and like I say, it's not widely recognized or a defined term in that kind of context of burnout research or psychology. But as we know, you know, it's the mental, emotional, physical exhaustion that reoccurs time and time again. And it's going to refer to when we have those individual experiences of burnout. So it might be every September you experience it, or every January you experience it, or even by the end of every academic year you experience it, and then you recover over the summer, and then you basically go back and start filling that burnout cup again from scratch. If you feel like you're going through that habitual burnout, you may be experiencing just that habitual burnout. So that's a bit more about what burnout is. Those are the stages of burnout. So what do we do? How do we recover from burnout? What is the road back to wellness? Now, what I'm about to say is oversimplified, because this isn't going to be a podcast that goes on for an hour, but I just want to share with you the four modules that we have inside that Beat Burnout course. And this isn't a promotion, but if you are interested in it, and this has been interesting, you can just click the link in my bio on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, and you can read more about the course there and grab it there if you want to. But that's not what today's about. What today's about is giving you the information so that you can either see if you relate to this, and hopefully, I actually kind of hope you don't relate to any of this, but you know, many teachers do, and hopefully you can then take steps to prevent this happening as we go into this new autumn term. So the four pillars of recovery then, that road back to wellness, you know, these are, like I say, the four modules inside the course as well. But that first one is going to be addressing your stress, looking at what your triggers are, what your stresses are, and looking at how you can manage that, learning stress reduction techniques, looking at proactive and reactive stress management, even things that are addressing our physiological stress and our central nervous system stress, and looking at things like, you know, breathing exercises, progressive muscle relaxation, mindfulness, meditation, you know. And I know that that might sound a bit wishy-washy, but it's really, really important, you know, to have these strategies and techniques, particularly if, like me, you're someone who can be susceptible to struggling with anxiety as well as high levels of stress. You know, for me, my anxiety comes up when I'm highly, 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 chronically, basically stressed. If you're someone like that, you know, similar to me, having these techniques is going to be really, really important, and also knowing how to manage your anxiety as well. But also just the proactive stuff, you know, finding out how we can fit that into your lifestyle. And that's the other pillar. You know, that's pillar number four of honing healthy habits. So looking at, okay, well, how do I address my stress? But then how do I get that into my lifestyle? How do I create these healthy habits, you know, to boost my energy levels, to manage my stress, to improve my overall health? You know, little things like our nutrition and our sleep and our diet. We all know, like, you know, you don't need me to tell you what we can do to look after ourselves. You know that. But there's a reason why it might not be happening right now. It's about building those habits, even looking at how we're going to rewire the brain. That is really, really important. The two other pillars then, when it comes to burnout recovery, are going to be, first of all, winning with your workload. So finding a way to manage, similar to managing the stress that's coming in, but sort of primarily focusing on the workload and prioritizing the workload, evaluating where our current workload is, making sure that we have a pipeline to kind of process that, making sure that we have matrices and we're organized. We don't just have a 200 item to-do list that's constantly, you know, burning through our mind day and night. Having, you know, a system for effective planning and making sure we're not spending hours upon hours on assessment and data and all this paperwork there is so much of now as a teacher. And then we kind of go into the final module, which is building boundaries. So this is all about communication and setting your boundaries effectively, having limits with things like screen time and technology, having that commitment to yourself, knowing why you struggle to say no and how to overcome those barriers. So when we're talking about the road back to wellness from burnout, we are talking about addressing your stress, winning with workload, building better boundaries, and honing healthy habits. And like I say, this isn't going to be a half an hour episode. I want it to be a short, quick introduction to what burnout really, really is. But just to wrap this up, I want to quickly touch on the seven types of rest. So these seven types of rest is something that you can go away and you can take right now and you can start to implement alongside those four pillars that I've just told you about. Now, Dr. Saundra Dalton-Smith, who is a physician and an author, has coined these seven types of rest in 2017. So again, fairly recent research and sort of putting it together, which I think is important that this is relevant and you know, timely for us. But these seven types of rest, for me, I can almost pin each type of rest to one of those symptoms of burnout that we talked about before. So the seven types of rest are mental rest, physical rest, emotional rest, sensory rest, creative rest, social rest, and spiritual rest. So I'm going to really briefly just talk you through, because one thing that I see hold teachers back when it comes to managing burnout and beating burnout is the fact that we think of rest as either sleeping or lying on the sofa all day. Now, when it comes to physical rest, we're thinking about active physical rest and passive physical rest. So passive physical rest is napping, sleeping, lying on the sofa. That's passive physical, and that is really, really important, but it is certainly not the only thing. Remember, you are not just your body, you are your brain too. And actually 88% of your health is not physical. It's mental, emotional, social, creative, all the things I've just said. So we need to address those areas of our health with that rest as well. We obviously have active physical rest, which is things like stretching, gentle movement, things like that, which is important. Again, something that many of us don't prioritize and we don't get into our day. And again, I'm not going to talk to you today about how to do that or anything. I just want to introduce you to it. So then we have mental rest. Now, mental rest is allowing our mind to take a break from constant thinking, constant problem solving. And this might be through literally having a bit of unplugging time where we go away and we literally have time to switch off. It might be, you know, things like meditation or mindfulness or even spending time in nature, just basically not putting more in the brain. Because as a teacher, your brain is constantly being asked to become not just a thinking machine, but a storage facility as well. And we know all about short-term memory as teachers. We know all about working memory. We know we just can't hold that much in our brains. We know it for the children. We plan our lessons around it for the children. So how comes us as adults, we don't give ourselves that same grace? We don't give ourselves the same kindness. Then we go on to sensory rest. So when we're thinking about sensory rest, it's about reducing that sensory overload. And this might be having quiet time, periods of time, being in dimly lit spaces instead of a horrible, you know, illuminated classroom with really artificial bright white lights. It might be minimizing our exposure to screens or noisy environments. And of course, if you're listening to this and you're a parent, you're probably thinking, well, it's kind of part and parcel of my life. And I totally get that. I'm not a parent myself yet, but I have a niece, I have children, friends with young children, and you know, and they all tell me that it is obviously very, very full on. Not to mention, I've coached now hundreds of teachers who are parents as well. I get that it is a full-time job, maybe two full-time jobs on top of teaching. And it's really difficult to get that sensory rest. But when you can, and again, without going into the other modules and talking about boundaries and stuff, when you can, see if you can communicate with people around you and get a little bit of that sensory rest. Then we're going to think about creative rest. Now, this creative rest might involve stepping away from the demands of constant problem solving, constant creativity, you know, and engaging in activities that allow your brain to rest and almost what I call kind of go into default backup mode and use the default mode network. And where we're not actively thinking, but giving it an opportunity to wander, an opportunity for our imagination to flourish. And it might be reading or daydreaming or music or art or just, again, going out in nature, but giving your brain an ability to stop problem solving the issues that it faces on a daily basis, but an opportunity to experience and explore and do things that, you know, basically nourish that creative sort of part of you. We've also got emotional, you know, as a teacher, you take on so much, as I say, with that wet sponge analogy, so much emotional toll, you know, there really, really is so much filling up your sponge every day. And this is about managing that emotional well-being, taking time for you, maybe things like journaling, reflecting, again, setting boundaries, expressing how you're feeling to maybe someone from Ed Support, maybe your partner, maybe a best friend, maybe a colleague. Just making sure that you are processing what's happening to you and not burying it down, not trying to sit on it, because that never works. We need to process what's happening to us, process the emotions that come with it. It's uncomfortable, it's longer, we don't like it all the time, but processing that emotional stress is super, super important. So moving on then, just to wrap this episode up, we need to think about social rest. So this may be for some people involving distancing yourself from social interactions when they begin to become draining, or even putting yourself in nourishing social situations where you're with friends and family who support you, and you feel like we looked at, detachment is a big part of burnout. You feel that you need that connection and you go out and you seek it, sometimes by temporarily disconnecting, but sometimes by actually going out and seeking it. And then finally, the final type of rest is spiritual rest. Now, this doesn't necessarily have to relate to religion, but it's about purpose and meaning in life. And if you've been teaching for a while, and you know, you don't have the drive, or you don't want to, you don't have the ambition to, you know, climb the ladder or to go into SLT or to transfer or into a different area of education, and you're happy being a class teacher and that's what you want to do. Sometimes if you've been doing that for 5, 10, 15 years, you can feel a little bit like you're kind of stuck in a rut with life, and you can feel a little bit like you don't have, not saying you don't have a purpose, but you feel like you maybe don't have that aim or that focus with your career that potentially you once had, outside of literally surviving the half term and getting to the holidays. So finding a different purpose, and for me, this really connects with creativity. So finding something that I believe in, finding a cause, it may be a church, it may be a community group, it may be a sports team. Finding something, a community that you can connect with, who you share a meaningful goal with, and who you can work on it together, basically like a shared cause. So those are the seven types of rest by Dr. Saundra Dalton-Smith. I think it's really important to remember that when we are looking at addressing burnout, we're thinking about making sure we're getting mental, physical, emotional, sensory, creative, social, and spiritual rest. And I know what you're thinking, Charlie, that's a ridiculously long list. I can barely get enough sleep. How on earth am I going to prioritize myself? And over the next couple of weeks, we are going to talk about some of those pillars that we're looking at when it comes to beating burnout. So we are going to talk about addressing stress, winning workload, building better boundaries, honing healthy habits. We're going to talk about those pillars. So, you know, if you're feeling a little bit like today, like this is all great information, I definitely feel like I'm getting burnt out, but I don't know what to do, we're going to work on that over these podcast episodes over the next month or so. Anyway, team, thank you very much for joining me. A bit more, again, of a chatty, informal episode, but I hope this has been useful. I hope it's been a good listen for a Friday morning or whenever you're listening to this. And I hope, like I say, it has been useful and it gives you something to ponder as you go into your weekend. Take care, have a lovely, restful, relaxing, restorative weekend, and I'll catch you on Monday for our next episode.